Hey, Butternut Parsnips listeners, this is Seth, and have I got a treat for you. You might remember on our apostrophe episode, we had the creator of the blog of unnecessary quotation marks, Bethany Keeley Yonker, present the end of episode game. Well, we wound up having a conversation with her afterwards on our Patreon-exclusive podcast, Buttered Parsnips, about her blog, blogging in general, and the Y2K internet. But we decided it was such a good conversation, we'd release it to the general public. So here today is that episode. But before I let you get started, you should know that this is only one of at least 20 episodes of the Patreon-exclusive podcast, Buttered Parsnips, which you can listen to at patreon.com/butternoparsnips for only $5 a month. And technically, that could be a one-time contribution, and you could just listen to 20 straight episodes and then end your membership. Except, then you wouldn't get more buttered parsnips. And I think after listening to 20 episodes, you're gonna want more. You'll also get regular episodes early, and that's to say nothing of the Afterthoughts posts, where the hosts revisit past episodes in a blog format. There's fun to be had at patreon.com/butternoparsnips. But okay, you want the episode now, I get it. Enjoy.
Who do you guys think invented air quoting? How far back do you think that goes?
I wish that I had like knowledge. Like I wish that I knew the answer to this, because I feel like this is something everybody should know. I feel like it should be in every, you know, childhood classroom, I guess.
I want to make a joke answer, but I feel like it has something to do with, like, it must be after print, right? Like after people started using punctuation at all.
That's a fair theory. I do want to hear your joke answer, yeah, though.
What do you got? I don't have one. That's the thing. I wished I had a joke answer.
Got you.
I mean, it's got to be like somebody who was writing down like something very important and then ran out of paper and just had to talk about it, you know?
Like in Monty Python, it was like,
yeah, he was going to submit a formal proposal, exactly, and then had to just go in.
And it's how you know what he was citing was, you know, he had air quote.
I did some quick Googling. Use of similar gestures has been recorded as early as 1927.
Oh, that's more recent than I would have guessed.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
And the term air quotes didn't appear until 1989.
Wow.
That's so late.
That is so late.
It's the invention of irony.
Yes.
That's how long it took.
Speaking of irony, I gotta admit, I was thinking the ancient Greeks, like it feels like an ancient Greek thing, you know?
What?
Like, I feel like that's something they would like, oh, they invented as like, oh, you know, we use this in the Greek dramas to show when we're being ironic.
Yeah,
you know?
I feel like if Socrates wasn't so hostile to writing, then he would have used them.
Yeah, like, yeah. He famously didn't write anything down.
That's what the air quotes are for.
But they would have had to have quotation marks first.
Welcome to Buttered Parsnips, the Butter No Parsnips Patreon exclusive podcast. Tell your friends about us.
Hey, everybody, we're already in shambles. Welcome to Buttered Parsnips, the Butter No Parsnips Patreon exclusive podcast. I'm Emily Moyers.
I'm Kyle Imperator.
And today, as promised in our apostrophe episode, we are sitting down with Bethany Keeley Yonker to talk unnecessary quotations, blogging, the internet of the early 2000s, and so much more. Bethany, we are so glad to have you on today.
I'm already having fun.
I'm so glad. I've already made Seth do an edit. We're doing great.
If you ever want Seth to do an edit, and this is an inside scoop, just ask him to put in a sound effect. He'll remove you asking to put a sound effect.
That's right. That's the edit that he will do, is to remove you asking.
Anyway, listeners will recall that Bethany is the founder of the internet's blog of unnecessary quotation marks. I hope you could hear the air quotes there, which we were given a small taste of in the conclusion of our apostrophe episode. So let's start from the start, Bethany, in your own words. What is the blog? How did it come to be?
Well, so I was trying to remember this. So we got to set the scene. The year is 2005.
Go back.
I'm in college. The jeans are flared. Not everyone has a cell phone. I didn't even have a laptop. I accessed the internet via desktop computers only. Yeah. And blogs were relatively new. Some stuff, like I'd had a Zanga for several years. I don't know if you're familiar with this. Is a like an earlier blogging platform, sort of social media hybrid, similar to LiveJournal and all that other stuff that was going on sort of early 2000s. But when Blogspot came out, which was either bought by Google or started by Google, it was sort of a different format. Like it felt more professional, less teenagery. And I thought, wouldn't it be hilarious if I started one of these for something really specific? Yeah. So I don't know why I chose unnecessary quotation marks, except that like, I think the joke is right there, right? Like what could it possibly mean? Yeah. Obviously these were intentional quotation marks that were used for one of these lists of reasons that people would use quotation marks. So we just have to interpret what's going on here. And, you know, I'm a simple woman and that was funny enough for me. And I thought it was the kind of thing I could like get other people on board with. I did not anticipate the number of people who would later get on board.
Yeah. So you were taking like user submitted pictures, right?
Eventually. Like I wasn't even thinking that far ahead when I started it, but after a couple months, so it was just a couple moments of just the exact right moment technologically. Like that summer, I got my first cell phone and it was a camera phone and like a lot of other people were getting camera phones at that time. So I thought it was going to be like people would report in or I'd like have co-authors like writing about these quotation marks that they had seen, but everyone started sending me pictures because suddenly everyone had a camera on them.
And I was looking at your like archive by the late aughts, early tens, you were getting like over 1,000 posts per year, which is like a lot.
And it was only like one photo per post, but I would like schedule them out for like 5 or 6 a day, I think at the peak.
So like when it started taking off, did you expect early 2000s internet fame?
I did not. So I graduated college and moved for grad school. So I was a communication grad student. And yeah, just doing this on the side. And it started picking up when I was a master's student. And I started making money from the ads, which if you know anyone who's been a humanities grad student, the pay's not great. So it was like, it was a big deal money to me to get like a couple extra $100 a month. And so that was great. I was delighted by that. But yeah, my expectations were like, this would be a fun thing to do with 12 friends, not the sort of thing that like strangers would be sending me emails all the time.
Yeah.
I used my personal email for it, which I regretted lots of times, but oh well.
That's fair. But I feel like that was the early internet. We were all so, I can't say we, I was too young, but everyone was just like, we're all just goofing around. I can just put my email out and only like-minded people will respond at a level that is comfortable for me.
Well, it's not so much the like randos, although I've had a few incidents of that, but it was that my Gmail contacts list is just full of people who've emailed me one time about, and like I had no way of knowing, right, that I would still be using the same Gmail address 20 years later.
Right.
And like it made every Google attempt at social media completely useless to me.
But that's so great though. You could have a reunion someday. I said that, I put that in quotes, you know?
Of course, yes. I mean, I suppose if I want to spam something to many people, I probably have a decent list.
Yeah, if you wanted to send somebody like a message about a podcast that you were on that was really cool, hypothetically. You could get that out to like a lot of people.
You could probably honestly sell those contacts to like, I don't know, congressional campaigns or something like that. I think you got something here.
Why you gotta turn it into late stage capitalism?
I was going back to what you said before about how you just pick something like really specific. I feel like I did similar things way less successfully, but just as a joke, back in the early 2000s, I remember I would start like Facebook pages and I would be like, one of them was just like Box Wig. And it was like, just like for people who wanted to talk about Box Wig. And I got like, I don't know, 10 followers and I was like, yeah, I'm cool.
So I have twin siblings who are 4 years younger than me. So when they started college, Facebook was like the new hot thing.
Right.
And they were on Facebook. I was on Facebook. And then my dad's a college professor at the college we went to. So he got on there, like, because he's a very enthusiastic, supportive parent. And so he's like the only grown up on Facebook. And a bunch of my siblings, like friends in the dorms, like, oh, I'm gonna be friends with Dr. Keeley. Dr. Keeley is my Facebook dad. They made a whole group about that. Oh, and then my brother made a group called Dr. Keeley is my real dad. I'm not a poser like the rest of you. And it only had the three of us in it.
That's so good.
So good.
I feel like we should mention that your blog was not the only unnecessary quotes blog. Are you aware of Aspas Pisadas, the Brazilian offshoot of your blog?
I can't recall. I do think that they maybe let me know that that was happening, or maybe even ask permission, like they would need my permission, sure. But that was nice. Although I've got to say, like, bizarre is the better word.
Yeah.
In fact, when I like first created the blog, I called it inappropriate quotation marks, but I misspelled the word inappropriate and I was so embarrassed that I changed the word.
Funny.
Yeah, but it is truly just like the same joke, but in Portuguese instead of in English. And it's fantastic. I mean,
presumably you could do it in many languages. Yeah. I don't know if every language uses punctuation in the same way, but
yeah, we were talking about that. Like, it's weird that only one country found this and wanted to recreate it in their language. Yeah.
Maybe other people don't experience irony in the same way.
Honestly, that makes sense.
That's true.
So you made a book from the blog. How did that go? What was that process like?
You know, I had a couple agents reach out to me and maybe one or two editors, and sort of at first my attitude was like, why would anyone ever pay for a book of a website that they can access online for free?
Fair.
This is a ridiculous idea and I shouldn't do it. And I was in grad school and like focused on my work. But then one year, kind of in the spring, the chair of our department sent out an email that I later learned he did pretty regularly, which was like, we're probably not going to have enough summer courses for everybody to teach in the summer. So if you have other things you could do this summer, that would be a good idea to pursue them. And I said, okay, fine. And got in touch with Kate McKean, who's sort of the agent of the internet. She was on the rise at the time, and we worked together on a proposal, and then Chronicle bought it, and I spent the summer collecting images and sending emails. Like, another just fortunate moment was that was soon after the first iPhone came out. So the camera everyone had in their pocket got higher quality. So it was a lot easier for me to get like print quality pictures than it would have been even a year earlier.
Man, you were just great timing this great every time.
I was super lucky. And it's kind of a funny thing. Now I teach communication courses and I've done projects with students before. I actually do sort of similar project in my basic course now, where I ask them to use a social medium, figure out how to be awesome at that particular medium, and like define what that would mean and figure out how to do it. And because that's what I feel like I did. Like, I saw the medium and I was like, this is cool and new. I should figure out what it's capable of and just roll with it. And, you know, not everything succeeds or not everything's in the right moment, but it seems like that's the way to catch the moment on the front end if you're going to. But yeah, you have to be extremely lucky with the time. Sure.
Yeah, but you did. I mean, it seems like you like got like what early internet blogs were for and did it the right way and like succeeded. And like, those blogs don't, like, that's not a thing anymore.
It really isn't.
Like, what happened to that kind of blogging?
Well, Tumblr grabbed some of it. I think some of the ones that were similar, like, found their way to Tumblr, which is maybe a more useful home for the, like, same thing over and over.
Right.
But increasingly, I think people's internet habits changed from, like, I'm going to visit my 20 websites that are all in my bookmarks, or do like an RSS reader, RIP Google Reader forever. I'm still mad about it. And started just looking at social media. So they had like Facebook and Twitter, and then used that to get links out.
Tumblr was really good for that. I feel like Tumblr was I don't know if it was the first site, but it was like one of the first sites that was doing like everything that you follow goes to one feed. And it was like hard to explain that to people who weren't on Tumblr at the beginning. It was like, yeah, you just like you follow all these blogs, but they're all you just scroll forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Zanga was also doing that even earlier, like 2001, 2000 or so. Maybe LiveJournal and some of the others too, but they were a little more niche.
I mean, it's a smart move just in general, because it's like blogging, but modular, you know? It's like, oh,
right.
I could have a blog soup of all my favorite blogs.
Right, exactly. Instead of like Googling my hobbies over and over, I go this thing and something new shows up every time. And I can add more people. I had maybe part of how I like hit the right moment. I had done a project for one of my comm courses where we were supposed to like do our own like original research about something and then present a speech about it. So I talked about the blog culture at our college and my professor never heard of blogging. So he was really excited about, and I had like looked into it and like found some research articles about the earliest blogs in the mid-90s when like people were hand coding it. So because of that, like thinking about blogs for that class assignment, when someone from the local news contacted my professor and wanted to interview someone about blogs, he gave them my name. So I appeared on like Grand Rapids Fox 17 Nightly News. Is like, we found a blogger. Here's some B-roll of her typing.
They're real, folks.
That's exciting. I mean, that's like you are becoming the face of blogging of a generation, truly.
Yeah, elder millennials. It's me and Britney Spears, really.
Unparalleled equals.
Although, speaking of blogs, you do call out some other really good ones on your blog. I know, Kyle, you were looking at a few of those today, yeah?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yours is better than all the others. I just want to say.
Well, thank you so much.
Content-wise, it's just like post after post, I was cracking up. Like I was really, I was saying before this, I was like, man, these are just so good.
It's true, Bethany. Before you got in, Kyle was just reading off quotes.
I was like, this is so good. Font Police was a fun one, just because there was, I found one and it was like two signs too close together. And it read Greek Nathan's footlong yogurt hot dogs. And that just really tickled me for some reason. You know, it's very niche, but it's so good. Like there's something both nostalgic and unique about it that's you know, I don't know, is it just a blog thing?
Yeah, maybe. Oh man, I haven't looked at these in probably years. I forgot about Cake Rex. They're so good.
Most of them haven't been active in years.
That is, I think literally a weblog is gone. That was a good one. That was just examples of people using literally to mean figuratively.
Yeah, that one wasn't active either. I was trying to figure out what that was about. That's great.
And maybe occasionally they would have like illustrations, like I literally jumped out of my skin, that kind of thing.
Oh, and they would illustrate. That's fun. I like that.
That's very 2000s. Because I feel like literally everybody was saying literally in the 2000s.
Yes, for sure.
That is, I think we've lost that one. And like literally means extremely now and not actually literally. So fine.
Yeah, we just made a new meaning for that word. Language evolves. It's okay. But that is the thing. That's the thing about a lot of these blogs is it's, I mean, I talked about it in the apostrophe episode, but like the early 2000s internet was just nerdy people shitting on other people's bad grammar and like really, really getting some sense of superiority about it. I don't know if everybody else had that experience. I feel like that was my early 2000s.
Yeah. And actually, like, I've always had mixed feelings about that. That, like, you know, I never expected to be, like, the quotation marks girl, certainly. But, like, I don't know. I don't want to make people feel bad about their writing. When I tell that this is a great, like, fun fact about me topic that I roll out regularly, but when I tell my students about it, I always say, like, this makes people afraid to email me, and I promise I will not make fun of your grammar.
Yeah.
Because for me, it was always about, like, what if we take it seriously, and the, like, what we see is ridiculous, just like when your autocorrect makes you say something that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, sure, but then it's like, sure. It's one thing to make fun of autocorrect, which is a robot, but then to make fun of like a person who like just made a mistake.
Yeah, present day me would probably not start the blog for that reason, that it like feels a little mean-spirited, even though like I tried to make it feel like we're all in on this joke and everyone makes mistakes and sometimes it's funny. But yeah, I don't think that that's the attitude I would take in my current sensibility.
Yeah, so you won't go after the pedants in the comments section on, you know, Facebook or YouTube or anything like that.
Yeah. No. There's this classic XKCD comic where like someone's at a computer and their like off-screen partner says like, honey, are you going to come to bed? Like, oh, I can't. This is really important. Someone is wrong on the internet. And I think that was from this same era. Like I've definitely had that feeling.
Yeah. Wow. I forgot about XKCD comics. Those are so good. And so
I think he's still doing it.
Yes, for sure. But like there's so many classics from the aughts.
What do you feel drove that kind of tendency towards online discussion being a little pedantic in the early 2000s? I'm sure it still is today, but in a way different sense because of social media. But do you feel like blogs were the crossroads of like written word with a casual environment for the first time, perhaps? Was anonymity a part of it?
That sounds plausible to me. And maybe with a level of like, right, all it takes is 2% of people who are going to like constantly respond. And then like other people are going to start responding or anticipating the response. So it feels like a bigger thing than it is because they're always the ones yelling.
I also feel like for a kind of nerdy people who maybe didn't have like a lot of support in their real life, they liked finding things to grasp on that like united them to people on the internet, and like sort of having this like correcting the mouth breathers was like a big point of like union for a lot of nerds. And it was like, I feel like I have a group now.
Yeah, like, you know, free copy editing for everybody, I guess. One thing that came out of it, and you know, it's kind of like, I don't know if it's like part of the whole thing that I became a communications scholar, that like sort of gave me the eye for this kind of thing and thinking about how to use the media in that way. But certainly I've shifted more toward like, well, what matters is, are you communicating clearly? And honestly, like unnecessary quotation marks slow me down in an unhelpful way, right? Like, if someone's asking me for advice, I would say punctuate to communicate accurately. Standard edited English is usually the best way to make sure people are going to read what you think they're going to say. And, you know, I would say the same thing about sometimes my husband and I really love the spellings people use on Facebook Marketplace when it's just like an unusual word that like maybe they've never seen written down or didn't realize.
Sure.
Like the shawl that you see in a book is the same as the word shawl that you've heard. So they like spell it phonetically. And there is a certain amount of like, I gotta like backwards figure out what this person is saying to even understand that.
Right.
That like, in terms of clear communication, if you can help your readers out, that's what the point of all this stuff is in the first place. But I have definitely chilled out.
Yeah, I think that was the point that Bob came to in the apostrophe episode as well, is like, this is all just about clarity.
Big fan of that.
Yeah,
it's great to have two guests with the same opinion on how to manage grammar.
Yeah, we take a stance as a podcast.
There's an opinion. It is the correct one.
So we skipped over some of the other kind of great other blogs that are in your also read section on your blog. There were 13 that are listed there, including excessive exclamation, which you know, highlights the overuse of the exclamation point, lowercase l.com, which has some great uses of the lowercase l and otherwise all caps text.
Truly surprising how many things that they got there.
Really?
That's surprising. So niche.
But of the 13, only about 3 have posted within the last year, 6 haven't posted in a decade, and 4 just you can't even access. You know, we talked about what happened to this kind of blogging, how, you know, Tumblr kind of took it over, but people still enjoy this stuff, you know, I think. Do you think people still enjoy this stuff?
I think so. I mean, yeah, I brought back the blog during COVID because I was bored and I thought other people were too. But I didn't keep it up for very long, partly because, you know, I can see the numbers and just not that many people were looking at it.
Yeah, I feel like Instagram might be the place for that kind of thing now, because again, it's got that like condensed feed and a lot of like niche content like that is there. I was thinking an example would be some of the Instagrams that we've had as guests on this podcast, like tautonyms and medical etymology. Like those are Instagram blogs for niche topics. Would you consider going over there?
I don't think so. I mean, if I had all the time in the world, I am personally a big fan of cats being weird little guys on Instagram in that sort of vein. So for me, like when people would ask me when I was doing the blog a lot, like, how long do you think you're going to do this? And I would say, as long as it's fun and as long as it makes money, which like, so the ad income was like a big deal to me and like made the difference between something that I would make a priority or not, especially, you know, everyone's got limited time.
Yeah.
So that got a little bit tougher. Like when internet advertising moved from just like placing ads to more like sponsored posts and that kind of stuff. I was working with a group called Blog Her, but eventually everything was like going towards the like mommy blogs and sponsored posts. And it just doesn't make sense to be like, these quotation marks are sponsored by Ragu spaghetti sauce. Like, like it didn't fit with what I was doing.
Yeah.
And then something like Instagram, like, Meta doesn't do advertising profit sharing at all.
Yeah.
So the only way to make money on those platforms is to like direct people to buy something or get someone to pay you to advertise their stuff like in feed. So I probably wouldn't do it for that reason, that like I couldn't figure out a way to monetize it to make it worth my time.
Yeah. Because then you've got to compete with like, I want to make money, but I don't want to like make this fun thing into a really disingenuous thing where I have to sell something.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I'm not a great designer. Maybe if I had like come up with some merch, then it would make sense to change platforms.
Sure.
Oh, I now want shirts with some of those unnecessary quotes on them. I would buy. I got to be honest.
One of my favorite of all time, I think, was also a Cake Rex, that it was someone had cake that had in quotation marks the words Olympic rings. Like instead of drawing the Olympic rings on the cake, they just wrote the words in quotation marks. That's just perfect.
Yeah, that's exactly what you want.
My mom works in a bakery, and she'll tell me some of these horror stories that like her coworkers or, you know, so her, some of her employees have done. And I can't help but think, like, did you really think somebody wanted that on their like, wouldn't you call and be like, wait, can you confirm for me before I write this?
Yeah, yeah. Or like sign makers where you'll see like a giant billboard with a spelling error. It's like, did they do it on purpose? Was it out of spite? Like the sign maker had to have known.
I mean, sometimes clients can be like really insistent that whatever they said is what they want, and don't try to correct me. I have to assume that that's some of them, right? Like, it must are you sure? Yes, very sure. All right.
Okay. On your head be it.
Bethany, is there a site that you went to often in the 2000s that it maybe doesn't own the same cultural stranglehold anymore, or doesn't exist anymore? Yeah.
Well, I already mentioned Google Reader, and that was... There's like a small group of us who were like really invested in that. And what made it so good was it was an RSS reader. So it gathered all your blogs together. Plus you could share stuff to your friends on Google Reader. So I didn't have a ton of friends. I had like, I don't know, 10 or 15 friends, which was perfect because I knew who I was sharing to. And then we could like have a little discussion of the like article or post that I had shared or that they had shared. And so other people would like put stuff into my feed. It was so cool. And then Google stopped supporting it. They got rid of it. And I'm still mad. It's like, it's probably been 15 years.
You know, that's so funny. Kyle and I were just having a conversation today about all the products that Google has just killed that would have been great.
My my daughter was upset about a thing that the Just Dance video games have stopped supporting. There's a little feature at the beginning of Just Dance 2020, like an anniversary thing where you like go through a bunch of different years, and she loved it and it doesn't work anymore. And she was like literally crying about it. She's 7. I was like, I get it, man. I'm still mad about Google Reader. Of course, she had no idea what I was talking about.
So I was a bit of a late comer to the internet because I had sheltering parents. So I missed MySpace entirely. Were you guys on that one?
I got on a little bit late because I was so big into Zanga, but I definitely had one.
I actually didn't use it at all. Bethany, could you tell us about MySpace? Can you teach us about MySpace?
I feel like we're sitting down at like preschool. Like,
gather
can you
around,
tell us?
Children. Let me tell you about the Y2K internet.
So, what's the zeitgeist here?
Yeah,
I mean, so it was sort of like it predated Facebook, and they were kind of competitors for a while. But Facebook was only college, so and MySpace was more broad, and it had like a blog element, but then also had like the social element was more intense, and you could put like the most MySpaces were like animated GIFs, and a song would play and it would take like 20 minutes to load.
Yeah.
And importantly, you could choose which of your friends were in your top 8 on your main page and the order of them. And this was the source of a lot of drama.
Sure.
And the order is the source of drama. Just oh my
really
God. Can you imagine? Yeah, like going up to someone in person and be like, here's where I rank you amongst my closest associates.
We're not so close anymore. I've taken you out of my top 8.
Yeah. It's like, oh man, you see, Brad dumped me down to number 5.
That's how you found out when people broke up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was number 1. That's so tragic. Yeah, no, I was on, you know, I did like Neopets and Club Penguin. That was my social media. In that time.
There was a lot of Neopets drama and like scams and stuff. People were intense about that.
Yeah, I wasn't intense enough on Neopets to get into the like market crashes that happened there.
Really, yeah.
That is, the children were ready for the economic crash of 2008 because of Neopets.
They were mentally prepared.
I probably reached a point where their Neopets currency was doing better than the real dollar.
I think you could say their Neopets were doing better than real humans.
Than themselves.
Yeah, even though they hadn't been fed in years. I was on a lot of forums in the 2000s. Did either of you do forums of any kinds?
I did not.
Yeah. What kind of forums did you do, Kyle?
It's a little embarrassing, but I was on a lot of Pokemon forums when I was younger.
Heck yeah.
A lot. And I was into like a sprite work. So I would like make video game sprites a lot and hang out with those
fellas.
That's
right. Kyle has like real cool sprites. If you dig deep in the internet, you can find really cool Pokemon sprites that Kyle made.
You find some of my old usernames. They're there.
Amazing. There was like a writer internet and I was in like a young writer's forum, and there may still be like internet crumbs of my deep investment in the Over the Rhine fan forums, and before that even listserv, because that's how old I am when we did our social in email.
I mean, it's a great way to do social. We should do it more now, because right now all of the emails that I get are in the form of social, but they're advertisements, but always with my first name and we miss you.
Yeah, but like this was like, I mean, you self-described yourself as an elder millennial, Bethany. Mm-hmm. I know I am on just like the tail end of a youth millennial, but like this was the millennial internet. This is what this is what shaped us all. What happened to it? It's gone now. It was a glorious time and it's over.
Who had the You're Wrong About, I think, did a really good podcast with Anne Helen Peterson. And her argument was actually Gmail, that Gmail's like unlimited inbox meant everybody could spam you more, and then our email just became terrible.
Interesting. Wow. So freedom destroyed our happiness.
That's right. If you had to go through and delete things, then the total number of things in your email maybe would be better.
Sure. You had a curated experience. Yeah.
And you know, Facebook wrecked everything ultimately. Sure. I think that's probably, sorry, Zuck.
Yeah, that's fair. And, you know, everybody was sick of getting Rickrolled too.
Not me. I still laugh every time.
Oh, absolutely.
I literally Rickrolled a friend yesterday.
You're a hero. You're a hero to mankind.
I was like, oh, did you see this thing? And I actually had something to show her. And then I was like, no, wait a second.
I have an opportunity in this moment.
I had a student once, I've been teaching public speaking type courses since 2005 as well. And one time I had a student give a whole speech about this Shostakovich violin concerto and how important it is to him. And he got to the end and he was like, now I'm going to play a little bit of it for you. And he Rickrolled the class.
Wow.
Wow. A legend. Truly a legend.
Truly.
It was incredible.
I mean, to put that much effort in, you know, for the setup.
He did say
great.
That everything he'd said about the Shostakovich, he really did mean about the Shostakovich. But.
Sure. Well, Bethany, before we run out of time here, I do want to bring it back to your blog, because in case we haven't said it enough, it is hilarious.
So please enjoy it, everyone. I put so much work into it 10 years ago.
But it's true. People just really seemed to use quotation at random for emphasis often. Why do you think this happened? Why do you think everyone was like, quotation marks mean it's important?
That is a great question, and I have never figured it out. So people would send me headlines a lot, and I would mostly be like, nah, like this is a journalistic convention. They put any word that has like any kind of judgment on it in quotation marks. So they're attributing it to a source and not the journalist or the paper itself.
That's a real reason to use it.
But I could see like someone who sees that regularly in print, like in headlines, might take that to mean like this is the most important word. Because usually they were like the charged words, right?
Sure. That's a really good theory.
Just like mimicking the side of it, misunderstanding it. That is actually a really great theory.
But also they're decorative. They're pretty. They're one of the nicest looking punctuation marks, I think.
It's so are you a fan of the liberal use of quotation marks?
I'm agnostic on the question. But, you know, punctuation's cool. I'm in favor of it, like, as a concept. Mm-hmm. I like explaining to my students how to actually use a semicolon.
Yeah, I mean, punctuation in general, I mean, has come a long way socially since the early 2000s, you know? In the early 2000s, we used punctuation for emojis for our faces. And now it's not used at all.
Now you have a whole menu available to you with like multiple different types of skiers.
But which I'm relieved about, because I never knew how people made all those like really long ones with all the weird characters that aren't on a normal keyboard.
Like the table flipping one. Yeah, I've never figured that out. Or the shruggy.
Where are you getting these like secret punctuation marks that I don't have?
Emily, you don't also have a Japanese keyboard? To type in katakana. I have perhaps a final question for you, Bethany. I was wondering, having spent so much time with unnecessary quotes, has your relationship with like seeing unnecessary quotes changed over the years? Do you find yourself sometimes like putting, like, as a joke, putting unnecessary quotation marks and things?
Only when I'm acting as quotation marks girl. Like, if people ask me to sign the book, I will put best wishes with the best in quotation marks and sign my name.
That is adorable. That is so great.
But honestly, like, in everyday life, it does not typically occur to me.
Like, you don't see unnecessary quotation marks, or you don't have a visceral reaction?
If I see them, then I feel the need to make a joke about it, like, out loud to whoever's around.
Yeah, the world is your blog now. Whoever happens to be near you.
I say it's a perfect time to use air quotes, I say.
It is indeed.
I think you could. All right. We could take this on the road already. This is my this is my idea for the Blog of Unnecessary Quotes part two. You're going to do the Blog of Unnecessary Air Quotes, and you're going to do it for every time you see someone using air quotes.
Like, it's a TikTok account, but I like whip out my phone and like, you have to say that again exactly the way that you
yes
did.
Yes.
Oh, this is good.
It's the law.
Like, you could do this. I know that we just got done saying how hard it is to monetize social media accounts, but this would be so legitimately good.
Nobody has that kind of time anymore.
No one, no one. And honestly, it does feel just a little cruel.
I guess TikToks are kind of similar too, but like a vastly different medium than like a text-based blog. But it is kind of the same thing of just like, here's the theme of content that I'm going to give you on a periodical basis.
I think TikTok's really like with the trending sounds and what's that like, and the other kinds of like meme things. Like, there's a way to participate in something like that without it becoming your whole personality, which, you know, pros and cons. My academic expertise is in religion and American politics. Rhetorics of religion and American politics, as you can imagine, that makes me a lot of fun at dinner parties. So it's nice to have something else to talk about.
So the unnecessary quotes is like a defense, a safety mechanism.
Right. If I don't want to actually talk about politics or religion with someone I've just met, this is my friend Bethany. She makes a blog about quotation marks. Works pretty well. I mean, I'm a 40-year-old mom now, so I don't go to parties, but...
I think I'm going to use the Blog of Unnecessary Quotation Marks the next time I'm at Thanksgiving dinner and don't want to talk about politics or religion.
There you go.
I think that could be a good segue into a fun topic.
But on that note, Bethany, Unnecessary Quotes Girl, is there anything that you'd like the masses, or I guess just our patrons, to know about anything we've talked about today? Grammar, the internet?
I don't know. If you're looking for a college degree and you want to hang out with me, I work at Trinity Christian College. It's outside of Chicago. It's a really great place if you want a liberal arts education from a Christian perspective. You don't have to be Christian to come here, but you do have to be willing to hear us talk about it.
There you go.
Yeah, please become a student of Bethany's. More so, we've all been her student through the internet. Now become, honestly, it sounds like you have a lot of practical teaching through your class. Not that I'm surprised, but it sounds really wonderful.
Well, we try and we have a good time here.
I mean, we've certainly had a good time here being your, I guess, your fellows for the past hour.
Absolutely. Me too.
Well, thank you so much, Bethany, again, for joining us today for this conversation and sharing your insights on that weird, weird, beautiful, strange time of the internet. And this is a reminder to all of you to go check out the still extant, though no longer regularly updated, unnecessaryquotes.com.
Yeah, thank you so much, Bethany. This has truly been a pleasure. And thanks to everyone listening who helped to make this episode happen. It's a bit of an experiment, and we're really glad to give you exclusive content like this, which makes your contribution all that much more valuable to us.
Absolutely. So with that, I have been Emily Moyers.
I've been Kyle Imperator, and you've been
Bethany Keeley-Yocker.
And we'll catch you on the buttered side.